Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio Presents OPA number 162. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Ken Phillips. What is up, good sir?
Hey, man, how's it going? We're getting to be pros at this whole Zoom thing here, I think, Kevin. I think the internet is figuring out how to video conference. We're getting on with them, I'd say.
Yeah, we have not been Zoom bombed yet, so that is probably good news, I suppose.
Yeah, that would be kind of interesting, though. In a way, you know, if that did happen. I'm not saying I'm inviting Zoom bombers, but,
I don't think there's going to be anything that can be, that we can be offended by. You know what I mean?
Right. This isn't, like, important business meeting in some ways. It's not like we're trying to work out a bill or something that's going to get ruined or, you know?
Yeah, we are not working out special details on our Hyperloop options for Elon Musk since we really need Columbus to be in on this Hyperloop thing.
Yeah, we're not doing that. So that it's a little lower pressure here, I'd say. Zoom bombers would just be a mere annoyance, I suppose, rather than like a serious disruption. So, and it might be an interesting a podcast. Who knows? So, yeah, I guess we're all still living the quarantine life here.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, after hitting the old furlough thing, time is a little bit crazier, because it, when you, as much as I have done with stuff for Stunt Granny, yeah, time kind of gets away from me sometimes. Now, I can definitely understand, you know, the people that are in my situation that, you have no choice but to wait it out.
So I feel like it's been a while since you have been, out of work. You were at your previous job for quite a long time.
I have never
consecutive years.
I have never done the unemployment thing. Even the when things went sideways in 2008, so I did get the. I knew quite a number of friends who had to leave the architecture profession. Some of them permanently, some of them temporarily, in 08 and, got into other things. I kept a job that whole time and this time, not the case.
Yeah, it does seem like it's kind of put a damper on more things. At one point, I think we noticing construction still going on, but I feel like that has kind of slowed down even.
There is still some stuff going on, but that is part of the reason why I am sitting here twiddling my thumbs just waiting this thing out. Like, and even like the unemployment office is like, yeah, we know. Like, there's like,
Whoa, you're back.
Okay, yeah, you're there. But, if you didn't hear me, do you hear me now?
I do.
Even the unemployment office, like, yeah, we know nobody can do anything about this shit right now, so just sit tight. Like, they... It seems like, because I had heard that there was somewhat of a hassle to get unemployment previously. It does not sound like it's going to be as much of a hassle in the current state of things.
Yeah, I was one of the people who was let go during the 2008 Great Recession, as they were calling it.
Yeah.
It's so, yeah. And during that time, you did have – they, like, increased the length of time you could be on unemployment. You still had to kind of go through, excuse me, the same hoops that you would normally – like I think you had to apply for 2 jobs a week or something like that and make part of it. So there was, you know, you had to like answer questions and stuff every week when you're filing for unemployment. But, yeah, it sounds like, this time that they're waiving a requirement just because like no one's working. I saw another, I think it was 5.5 million people filed for unemployment last week, like in addition to.
Oh yeah. It's up
millions
to
and millions.
Yeah. It's up to 20, the low 20s, like 22 to 24 million.
Yeah. That's just,
they great. Said that the only comparison is the Great Depression. I'm like, yeah, great. Fantastic.
I can remember thinking in our younger days, Kevin, that, you know, we lived in pretty boring times. There wasn't, you know, that much going on. There was no like world wars or, you know, Great Depressions or any of that stuff. And I kind of was like, oh man, I'm sorry we missed out on that in some way, but you know, I guess that's what you get.
Yeah, time has a way of catching up with you at some time. Some part of your life. And yeah. This has certainly been one of them. It's been an experience, to say the least.
Yeah, I feel like the 90s were a weirdly stable time in some ways, comparatively. Better stuff then too, but it just the problems we had back then, I feel like, weren't as the ones that we're having today, but
Yeah, this is pretty epic. Hopefully it's the only epic level event that happens in our life. I could go for some just great or big events moving forward. I would be just fine if life does not throw us this big of a curveball again.
Yeah, I think I'm not going to complain about, boring history that we're living through after this. If things want to go back to being boring, I think that is just fine by me. speaking, I guess, historical events, Kevin, this article caught my eye, and I wanted to share it with the podcast listeners and yourself. This is kind of another, I guess, piece of evidence that's pointing to our fellow, shall we say, the Neanderthals are extinct human relatives who, died out 50,000 years ago, something like that. Or maybe I must have been less than that. I don't know, 30,000, whatever. A long time ago.
Yeah, it's still a while ago. It's still quite a number of human lives ago.
And I think that the term, though, can still be kind of tossed around as a bit of an insult. If you wanted to call someone a Neanderthal, that wouldn't be, you know, because you're giving them a compliment.
Yeah, there is definitely still, I feel like even the PC left has been okay with the Neanderthal slander.
There's no safe spaces for Neanderthals.
Yeah, no safe spaces for Neanderthals.
But maybe there should be, this is, I guess, a piece of evidence to say that Neanderthals were really not as stupid as the reputation would have them. Scientists were able to detect evidence of fiber technology. So that's using plants to create yarn, basically. In that, they found some fibers that were like on a tule leaf, and they used
I'm glad you're reading it and I'm not this time.
They used a microscope, Kevin, and spectroscopy to reveal a 6 millimeter long cord fragment made out of 3 bundles of twisted fibers. These fibers could have been from the handle on the tool or from kind of net or bag. So 6 millimeter long, I mean, I want to say that's maybe getting to be like half an inch or something. So it's not long, but they were able to tell that it was twisted fibers that were put together to make yarn. And yarn does seem like a pretty simple thing, but have you ever actually tried to make yarn, Kevin?
I have not. But
it's a little more complicated than you would maybe think to start with.
Well, it's just a couple of strings woven together, but they kind of pointed out that to know what plant to harvest is a big part of the equation at this time in history. Mm-hmm. So you had to have some type of forest knowledge, and you had to work with it, to create the fibers.
Yeah, so they would take like the individual fibers, twist them together to form little strings, but then take those strings and like have groups of 3 of those, and then twist them the opposite direction, and then they can kind of process on to make, you know, thicker and thicker rope. But that's just a nice way to make a sturdy piece of yarn from, you know, plant fibers. So there is a little bit. There's a mall process, and like you said, you also have to be able to know where to get the materials. This does kind of show that they would have had to have had the ability to kind of recognize how to make this stuff, how to learn it, and teach the next generation how to do this. So it's passed on. So I don't know. This is another notch in the belt for those Neanderthals. I don't know.
Yeah, because I feel like they linked to a couple of articles in this article, and I feel like we had done at least one of them about how the Neanderthals had better technology than we had thought. Because the one thing that this article does mention is that there would have been humans in the area at the time when this yarn was found. So it's possible that it could have been a human creation instead of a Neanderthal creation. But I guess I'm not surprised. Like, they're at least recent enough in history that you would think that they'd have some elementary tools of some nature, which to me means that you're functioning with some type of a string. You know, like, I guess I always thought of just like, even like the, you know, like, they're supposed to, Neanderthals are supposed to be after like the Flintstones, right? Well, I mean, the Flintstones had dinosaurs. But you know what I mean? Like, just like, it's after early, early caveman. You know, well, like the Lucy, because that's after the Lucys of the world by quite a bit, isn't it? Because it's 30,000 years ago that the earliest skeletal remains were found, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I feel like Lucy was like extremely, extremely old. It's interesting that you would feel like the Flintstones would have been so far past. I feel like the Flintstones are modern human, you know, at just like kind of a Stone Age technology. Also having pterodactyls as garbage disposals. it's not 100% scientifically accurate, but no, no, I always felt like Fred Flintstone and those guys were basically modern humans, but you feel like that was further in the past even?
I guess I feel like there's a further... I guess my main point was, I guess Neanderthals were far enough along the timeline that I feel like they should have had at least some basic technologies. And the article also points out, which is something that I guess I think about a lot with the discovery of just even... because I had to take a lot of, well, not archaeology classes, but, you know, architectural history, and I took a lot of art history classes, and a lot of early art history is buildings, because that stuff's still around. You know, if someone made a painting back then, it just, like, there's a possibility that people were doing paintings on canvas, but the canvas just didn't make it.
Yeah.
You know, like it could, and you know, again, this article mentions it, like, things like this yarn that they had, it's, well, A, it's a newer technology that helped find it, but B, it's a item that tends to disintegrate and is hard to find in the physical form. Unless you're in some type of a frozen in a block of ice kind of situation.
An unfrozen caveman lawyer situation.
Yeah.
Or I suppose Encino Man, you know, depending on what reference you want to take from.
Yeah, I think they're both quality choices.
Thank you, sir. That... good point, because they were lucky to even find the sample. The you know, plant materials usually don't last that long in general. So yeah, the stone tools would stick around, but we just because I guess we stone tools still doesn't mean that there wasn't like originally, you know, some kind of cord wrapped around the handle to improve the grip, or you know, colorings or what have. Indicated a little bit more sophistication or put into the tools than what we're necessarily seeing today. So this, it is cool that for whatever reason, this yarn was able to survive the 41,000 to 50,000 years.
And yeah, I forgot, because the other articles that were linked were they had cooked with fire, buried their dead, and cared for sick members of their communities. Is all things that they've found out about Neanderthals.
Yeah, or at least there's evidence to say that. I guess you can't necessarily say 100% what happened back then, but...
yeah.
those are, I would say, are that we probably consider... I mean, those are pretty good for telling, you know, human culture, kind of universals, really. I mean, not everybody buries their dead, but they do something to their dead.
Oh, right. Yeah, there's always some type of ritual involved in death.
Yeah. And cooking with fire is, I would say, a universal thing in human culture. So, yeah, this is, I would say, putting them a lot closer towards being some kind of member of the human family.
Yeah.
Especially given the interbreeding that seems like happened.
Oof. Which is kind of interesting. It's like, well, there's some level of them that have made it into humans. So they're still sort of kind of around. Like someone is 1/1,000,000th of a part of Neanderthal. Like, wouldn't that be kind of crazy if you got back your 23andMe and it said Neanderthal on it? Yeah. Like 1% Neanderthal. Like, holy shit, man, I'm 1% Neanderthal. Like, can you claim that as being a minority then if you're one of the people that is...
Yeah, well...
Is part Neanderthal?
Yeah, I think they said, like, the most you might have is 1% or something. Neanderthal DNA in your...
No, what was that again? You skipped out on me.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say, I think the most that you could have as far as, like... all DNA would be like 3%.
Oh, 3%. Okay.
Somewhere around that, yeah.
That's still kind of a lot. Like, in the scope of things.
I would... I would think that was cool if I had 3% all DNA, personally. But I haven't... I chickened out in the DNA test, so...
Yeah, there's part of me that's always interested. There's part of me that doesn't like it for it makes it easier to identify me than it already is. Should I have to resort to doing something heinous?
Then it'd be easier for them to identify, like, your brothers and sisters, too.
Anyone in my family.
Right.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird.
And I guess I'm not that interested. Like, I'm interested, but not, you know, like, the price tag is always something to me that, even though they're not necessarily that expensive, it doesn't seem worth the hassle. Like, it was one of those things with, like, I knew that my one dog, Cayenne, was a boxer. Like, he was 100% boxer, no questions about it. Kia was definitely a mutt. I had some inkling, or I had a good notion of what she was made up of, but I'm like, I knew people that spent the money to find out the DNA of their dog to know what breeds of dog they were. And I was just like, I guess.
The concept of breeds of dog is kind of... in a way, it's kind of messed up, I think, just because it's like a human invention. Like, we made them that way. We decided what that breed is. And now, like, you're going to take this test to tell you what somebody else just made up, you know, on a time, like, what they are. I don't know. Because a dog, it's, you know, their temperament is somewhat maybe by their breed, but... you know, it's more than that for sure, I would say. You know, there is individual personality, I think. Oh, so, like, it's limited value, I would say, like, to determine what, you know, quote unquote breed the dogs are.
Yeah. And then that was the main reason why I didn't want to do it. I'm like, it doesn't really solve any problems. Like, the vet knows what to do to treat a dog. And they did a good job at treating her without knowing what she was made of, but what exactly she was really made up of.
I don't know if it's like that there's certain breeds that have more common, you know, health issues or something like that, maybe, but even then it's, you know, not always the case, so...
Oh, yeah, and there's still at least some, I think you can tell by their physical appearance, you know, you can get a pretty decent idea. I know that my one coworker got it done, and she found out that her one dog was part Pomeranian, but it ended up making sense why his hair got that, you know how Pomeranians kind of have like that golden brown kind of hair color most of the time. Like, when he grew out his hair, because he was some type of a, I'm trying to think of the white dog that grows hair. Some type of a Maltese.
Okay.
But when his hair got really long, it started to turn brown at the tips. And after she found out his Pomeranian, she's like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. You know, but again, like, how, it makes sense of that, but I don't know what it really does for you in the long run.
Did she ever take the dog bowling? I'm curious.
No, she did not take the dog bowling.
She didn't buy it shoes. It didn't take a turn. I was thinking of the Big Lebowski when he has the Pomeranian bowling because it was like couldn't be left alone or something like that. His wife's dog.
I was like, I know I'm missing a reference right now.
I'm not taking it bowling, dude. I'm not renting it shoes. I'm not going to take your turn. He didn't want to bring the dog bowling. That's funny.
Oh, that's... Like, there are times during this whole situation that I'm like, I have so much time on my hands. I'm like, how have I not rewatched something like that? We did recently change cable providers, and we now have HBO for as part of our package for the next 2 years, and we finally have access to Game of Thrones, so we're just restarting at season one, even though I'm in the middle of reading the book that you so kindly got me for Christmas. I know that I'm not going to be completely surprised by any events in either. I feel like I had enough running knowledge or remembrance of knowledge of the first season of Game of Thrones that the book wasn't going to throw any real curveballs at me. Like, I feel like the children are younger in the book than they are, the vibe that they bring to the show. And I kind of confirmed that by watching the first episode the other day. But the story seems pretty dead on, especially through the first episode. You know, yeah. Like, they haven't really left out any important points.
Be interesting to see your kind of transition to the seasons as you go through. But yeah, I feel like they are pretty good for the first, you know, 4 or 5 seasons, and then a little iffy maybe season 7 things. I feel like took a big downhill turn there.
Hated. I'm almost relishing watching it and going, no, it's not that bad. You guys are a bunch of assholes.
I mean, I was fine with it. I was on board. I was going to watch it no matter what. It just was not as good as I was hoping. But, you know, we'll see how you think it stands up.
Yeah, it's always one of those ones where finales are just rough. Like, I was so bummed recently with Hawaii Five-0's series finale. Like, that's always been one of those, it's so ridiculous, I love it TV shows for me, where it was super outlandish. Like, there was no reason that all of this stuff was going down on in Hawaii. But, you know, it was fun that they just went with it. And I didn't really like that finale. Like, one of the few finales that I can remember really... Because, like, I didn't end up making it to the end of Sopranos, which is another finale that people hated. Like, were people okay with the finale of The Wire? Or did people hate that, too?
I know there was like a season or two that people did not care for, saw as being lesser than other ones. But I don't know if we're okay with the finale or not. I don't remember hearing a big controversy about the finale.
Oh, I guess I remember Lost being a big controversy with it. And a lot of these are shows that I didn't even watch, but I know that the finales kind of suck. Or at least there was a lot of problems around it. So it's just going to be kind of funny knowing that people were angry with the finale and probably mowing through like 7 seasons in a couple of months. You know, I should get to that end. Maybe it won't be as disappointing when I don't have to wait 7 years or however many years that this thing took to create.
Yeah, some other good stuff there on HBO. I think I mentioned Watchmen before.
Yeah, and we had made a passing talk about doing a show on that when I eventually got around to it, so maybe I'll try to squeeze that in sometime.
That could be good. But we were just talking about Hawaii, Kevin. Hawaii, Bo, if I could draw your attention to a different island in the middle of the ocean, we can discuss the island of Krakatoa. And maybe it's just a volcano, I'm not sure.
Yeah, no, it's the island of Krakatoa, which it was... It's. I feel like that was a word that I used in my youth and got lost somewhere along the line. And I don't know, like, I don't think I truly got the reference when I used it when I was a child. But now I was surprised because it sits between Java and Sumatra in Indonesia. Which itself is something of an archipelago of a country. I mean, I know that they do have some solid landmass, but they have a lot of small islands that comprise the nation also.
And, yeah, Krakatoa is part of a Krakatoa archipelago itself, which is a small collection of volcanic islands that are luckily uninhabited. In terms of kind of the, I guess, the most famous thing about this place, it famously exploded back in the 1880s.
Yeah, the 27th of August, 1883, which that was another one where I'm like, oh, I kind of get why this was referenced. Like, this is an event that is pretty recent. You know, I guess it's not World War One recent, but it's after the Civil War, I think. Yeah,
it's closer to the modern era.
Yeah. Like, this is something that's kind of measurable. Humans were definitely writing down history and historical data.
And humans also had, you know, weather stations and kind of scientific equipment that makes some observations at the time.
Yeah.
Which maybe in years past they would not have. But yeah, apparently this was the loudest sound, or louder, I should say, than any sound that has since been made on the planet Earth.
Yeah, and I guess the one thing that was interesting to me is that there's a point, they mentioned that there's a point where sound gets so loud it becomes inaudible to us.
That was kind of an interesting section.
So,
it's basically like the, you know, sound wave, if you will, has peaks of high pressure and then troughs of low pressure. And, you know, the louder sound is kind of the greater difference between the peaks and trough. But at some point, the trough will actually become like zero air pressure. So it'll be like a vacuum, basically.
Right.
And it can't actually get louder than that, zero. But you can't really have negative air pressure, I guess.
Right.
At least, or so I can.
So, yeah.
So this it stops like being a sound. And it's more like a wave that's like pushing these kind of like pulses of air forward.
That's kind of wild. So like you've got to fall into this range where you're loud enough that you don't get to that level of sound. You know, to still be on that sound wave length.
I think they said in the article that close to the island it was that loud that it was acting like a shockwave. And they did have reports of there was a boat that was about 40 miles from the island when it exploded. And the captain wrote that half of his crew had suffered
hearing loss.
Bursted eardrums, yeah. So, man, that would be a crappy way to lose your hearing. I mean, not that there's a great way to lose your hearing. Like, just be, like, out there doing your job on the boat as a sailor, and then suddenly the island explodes 40 miles away, and the sound destroys your eardrums. Not cool, man.
No, not even a little bit.
But, yeah, the interesting thing that the article mentioned, or one of the interesting things, that this sound was actually loud enough that it circled the Earth 4 times. And this is as measured by the weather stations who could detect a cyclic drop in barometric pressure that basically matched the amount of time it would take for that wave to kind of cross the globe and come back again for 4 days after the explosion. So the Earth was basically ringing like a bell.
for 4 days.
Yes. But people could not actually hear that for 4 days at least. Although they did hear it from like 2,000 miles away.
Yeah, well, this, because I did scroll down to this part, it says the explosion registered at 172 decibels at 100 miles away from the source.
That's louder than a jet engine, like standing right next to a jet engine.
Yeah, which I believe is 100?
Yes, 150 decibels. So okay. If I understand decibels right, it basically the loudness double for every 10 decibels. So that would be like 4 times louder than a jet engine.
Yeah, so that's, even though the number is only 20 apart.
Yes. So that's very loud. safe to say.
Yeah. So that and your ears would not be too cooperative if you're standing right beside a jet engine either. By the way, people, no. Do not try that at home.
do not attempt
to get an idea about how loud Krakatoa was by standing beside a jet engine.
So yeah, like 2,000 miles away in New Guinea, they heard the sound of the sound of like artillery firing, and even 3,000 miles away, sounded like the distant roar of heavy guns. That would be like,
was that standing in Australia? I believe
Rodriguez, the island of Rodriguez near Mauritius. I said that wrong. But it's like that would be the standing in Boston and hearing a noise that occurred in Ireland.
Yeah, that's not a long way away.
Not a normal occurrence.
No, that one's pretty fascinating, because I always remember there's one about one of the earthquakes causing a bell to ring in California for a couple of days, but I believe the sound got heard from somewhere in California to Boston. It was not this high of a level.
You know, you had mentioned talking about Krakatoa when we were younger, and that this triggered a memory for me too, because I can remember reading a book, and it was a children's book, dealing with Krakatoa. Some type of explorer, you know, went there, uncovered like a secret diamond mine that was, hidden on this island. Then was able to like escape in a balloon for the eruption. I remember it being a good book, and then I looked it up, and it's called The 21 Balloons, published in 1947, written by William Penne Dubois. I don't know if it's French fellow. It's written in English. So, yeah. I'm almost curious to see if that actually was any good. Probably not. But it really captured my imagination. And for some reason, the idea of Krakatoa really stuck with me over the years.
Oh, yeah. I guess I've been more overtaken by the intrigue of Vesuvius since I have been down at Pompeii. Just the general destruction of a volcano is of interest to me. Like, it is horrific, really, what those things can do. So, yeah, but I guess because of looking at Pompeii so much, I kind of forgot about Krakatoa, I think, somewhere in between there. There's not any ancient archaeology to dig up or people to pull out that were huddled into place when lava flew over them.
No, for a long time there was just a cult left there on Krakatoa after the island basically exploded. But I believe in the 20s there was the signs of a new mount forming a site of the former volcano. So I think they were the new Krakatoa or son of Krakatoa, maybe is what they're calling it. So yeah, there is kind of a new island there, but yeah, nothing you could really visit from what I understand. And, you know, no human art at all, like there would be at Pompeii, because like, there was no one living there.
Yeah. That's for the best, like, because their heads probably would have exploded if they were living there at the time of the explosion.
Along with the rest of their bodies, I would say.
Yeah, that would be a pretty rough.
It would just be like a Kingsman situation where their heads were just exploding.
That'd be a rough way to go.
You know, I don't... Anyone, I got to get you the Netflix login too, Kevin, so you can.
Oh, no, watch we it. Have that now too, so.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you can check out Tiger King along with America.
I have done a good job of not falling for the bait on that one so far. I guess I have amused myself with things such as. Professional wrestling from 1983. I watched the original, it became Extreme Championship Wrestling, but, it started as Eastern Championship Wrestling, and their first episode was 1993. That one was, pretty wild to watch.
You went back and watched the first ECW episode?
Yeah, the first ECW episode. I watched some really old... I've watched a lot of really old wrestling stuff because... Because I guess that is the other thing about the new cable system. Like, it's more of a... It's almost like its own... it's WoW's version of a Roku more than an actual TV service.
Finally, the cable companies have cut.
Well, yeah, it kind of reminds me of the DVR where everyone got the TiVo at first and all the cable companies are like, oh, fuck no, that is not happening.
Oh, hell no.
We are losing money on this, people. We need these stat.
Yeah, these cable companies have done a pretty good job of defending their turf, keeping themselves relevant as times change.
Yeah, so I do feel like this is just one of those, hey, we're just cutting them off at the pass. We're going to offer it to you cheaper because we know that you're doing the same thing that everyone else is doing, but we want you to spend money on us instead of them, so.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I could get on my soapbox and say it should honestly be a utility, you know, similar to telephone, but, you know, what the heck do I know?
Well, amusingly enough, mine pays for telephone in the same process, so. Telephone, internet, cable, all in one place again.
Well, Kevin, what's our time looking like here?
I think that we should save that topic for another time, unless you think that it is entirely, yeah, I think there's a lot to get into. Like, some of it's too heady for me, but I think it might be a little bit better if I digest, reread, and for now, I could definitely talk about some Beltane beer for a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Because we went on a beer run the other week. Last week, we stopped at Land Grant in Wolf's Ridge. I believe I drank some of the Land Grant on the show last week. Not last week's show. I drank that for Tuesday's show. But the other place we stopped in at, it was Wolf's Ridge Brewing. They had their strawberry table saison, which is called Protégé. And I'll tell you what, it's a very easy drinking beer. I almost might like it a little bit more had it gone full sour on it. But a saison is not a sour. Like, there are different beers. So, I understand. It is definitely a saison, but it is definitely leaning into the sourness levels that I do enjoy quite a bit. So it's a very light drinkable beer, 4.5% alcohol, 15 IBUs. So it is not at all hoppy, and definitely light at 4.5% alcohol. This is definitely not knocking back a Russian Imperial stout.
Well, I believe traditionally saisons are a little lighter on the ABV levels. So that makes sense there. I was drinking something a little different tonight. Didn't have beer, probably for the first time in a long time. I had instead a little bit of bourbon ginger ale, which I think, you know, that you got to do in these times, Kevin. You know, when you run out of beer, you have to turn to what you have in the cabinet.
I will admit that I have not done that, but the wife has definitely taken advantage by purchasing. She loves the little mini cans of cola that you can get these days. Mm. And she has been trying to get rid of some of the rum in our house.
Some rum and cola. That's not a bad move.
Yeah, it is an oldie but a goodie. I actually kind of thought about trying one myself.
We tried, and this is in Corona related news. We tried to, they've recently relaxed some law in terms of. You can now order to-go cocktails from establishments that serve such things.
Uh-huh.
And there's a Chinese restaurant down the street from our house that also has a little bar in there. Becky went in to pick up dinner and also ordered a couple of cocktails to go. So that was kind of fun.
Nice. Remember,
the the owner, I think, was there, was saying, this is just we're doing to-go cocktails. You know, enjoy it while it lasts, because, I don't know, the governor decided to be cool. Like, who knew? he's like, the governor's cool now, which I mention that to Jack so often, that we have a cool governor, just to get, as a little joke, because I thought that was funny. He's like, yeah, you got to keep people happy when they're in this situation. And then Jackie was saying that she read in Pennsylvania they closed down all state stores there. Like, you can't buy alcohol at all in Pennsylvania. At least wine and liquor.
Because I did see that DeWine was shutting down. A lot of people along the Pennsylvania border were coming. Which, I'm not... Because I feel like... I always wanted to do that when we were in college, because I've always had that propensity to try and get the higher ABV or the higher alcohol content, because I always did figure I'm gonna get drunker quicker if I have more alcohol in it. And Everclear was one of those. I guess I had always liked Ohio's alcohol laws better in general. But I always remember it being harder to get large quantities of alcohol. Like, going to get a keg in Altoona was the simplest of tasks. Getting a six-pack in Altoona when we had just turned 21 was a little bit of a pain in the ass.
Well, there was a place that sold kegs until, I believe, 11 o'clock at night.
Is that possible? I believe, is it wrong to say that it is Morris? But I remember exactly where it is, because I drive past it every time.
Right there, Pleasant Valley Boulevard.
Yeah, every time I come back to Columbus. But yeah, I believe I went there and got a keg at midnight, if I'm not mistaken.
I know there was a party that you got a keg. It was really late, and it's probably not a.
It might not have been quite that late. It might have been between 10 and midnight.
I think it was 11. I'm pretty sure it was 11.
Yeah, it was still pretty late, and I don't know how. Like, we really, like, the more I think about that, the more we really had a lot of people drinking that night.
Yeah.
Because we killed that second keg that night. Because the first keg was left over from the first party night. And we finished that keg to start the evening and then killed another keg.
Yeah. I remember, was that the night that I was, like, giving these, like,
speeches to people?
Speeches to try to get people to finish the keg?
Yes. Had someone had passed out in my parents' bed, and he crawled on his forearms down to the keg to help finish it off.
That must have been a hell of a speech.
Yeah.
I don't know. I cannot remember what I said, but...
I was not there for the speech. Personally, I think I was tending to other... I was probably putting out other fires at that point. But I do remember being down in the kitchen area and seeing him crawling out from my parents' bedroom to help kill the keg.
Yes, I recall that as well.
And I also remember that my parents got home earlier than expected the next day.
Oh, no.
And I had to quickly shuffle them in the house, take the keg out of the garage, put it in the back of my truck, and then come back in so it didn't seem like I was gone for too long, and then eventually... take it back to the distributor later that day. I mean, wow. I think I was just going to work and mowing lawns, so it was an easy task to get out of the house.
That is some like sitcom level hijinks there.
Sometimes I watch some of these. we watch this one show. What the hell is it? The Goldbergs. And the guy is our age, or maybe like a year or two younger than us. So I'm like, okay, this is all stuff that happened within our lifetime. And I think to myself, I'm like, I don't know if we had that many shenanigans going on, but there are times like that where I'm like, maybe I just forgot the shenanigans that did happen on a I'm sure a fairly regular basis.
There was a couple year period when there was a lot of shenanigans happening. I feel like, and maybe we forget some of those, but yeah, it's to remember, I think, to see where, how far you've come, perhaps, being a more responsible citizen,
where we're going in time, we can tease a topic again. Good.
We're going to tease our next topic for next week.
we're going Rick and Morty style, I think. Don't they travel in time some?
I think that's a big part of the show.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's another one that I'm like, oh, maybe I'll eventually catch up on this. That's another show that everyone says I'm supposed to like, but I've never watched, so.
Well, yeah, speaking of Dan Harmon, Community is just come out on Netflix, so I was kind of going back and watching that again here recently. Still on the first season.
Yeah, but, well, I was gonna say you can tap out after the third. Is it the? Because did he come back for the third season?
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Because he got booted after the first season, I think. Came back for the third, and then got booted again. I'm trying to remember how that happened, because that was just, that show was, it's one of those ones where it's just like, man, what, how'd this happen this way?
How did this get made?
No, not how did it get made. Like, I definitely understand why it got made. Like, it was very funny, but, like, I can't believe that things fell apart that quickly for something that was kind of, at least cult underground funny classic already, like the first season. Like, that's not usually the type of person that gets fired.
Yeah, he was the showrunner for 5 of the 6 seasons of Community.
So, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, then maybe there's just a consistency problem.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I was enjoying the first season so far, anyway.
Yeah, I remember that being quite funny. And I also remember at some point I kind of tapped out because it was just wasn't as funny as it was.
That happens sometimes.
Okie dokie, grandkids. I'm at Trafango11. That's at Gozer33. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you listen to us. And have a good night.
We'll see you.